This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has resigned as the Prime Minister of Malaysia. A lot happened over the past few months in the lead up to his resignation, one of which was the Black Flag and Lawan movements and protests. I'm not saying that the now former Prime Minister specifically resigned because close to 2,000 young Malaysians took it to the streets or demanded for it on social media, but it certainly played a role in piling on the pressure. Today, I'm joined by two youth leaders and activists, Kira Yusri, the co-founder of Undi 18, as well as Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're going to be discussing what next now that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has resigned. What are the youth paying close attention to? Welcome to the show, guys. How are y'all doing?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be back on BFM. Thank you for having us, Tasha.
So now, both of y'all were involved in the Lawan protests at different capacities. You know, Kira, you were a key figure in the protests. Now, one of the demands of the protests is for Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin to resign. The Prime Minister has indeed resigned. So, Kira, what are your initial thoughts on his resignation? What was going through your mind over the weekend and even up to yesterday, up till now, really?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think it's important to understand how did he finally tender his resignation, right? And that's true, you know, a very clear and it's very clear that UMNO has pulled the support, meaning that, you know, very without even going to parliament, unequivocally he has no more support anymore, meaning that, you know, if you go to parliament and prove it, he would have a no confidence vote. And I think he did the right thing by resigning, which is also in line with what the SSR and also, you know, if I can say, representative of the people demanded because of the failure of his administration in tackling, most importantly, the pandemic and the COVID-19 situation. So I think on a personal level, what went through my mind was, I acknowledge and I felt like, okay, this man is, I guess, trying to take, you know, trying to be accountable and resigning. However, what's next is also a very important question. And I think that's what's been on my mind so far, right? Who are the alternatives that are available? How will the mechanism of selecting the next PM be about? I think those are very important questions for the people to educate ourselves on, because we are in a parliamentary democracy. And I think these processes are, you know, are key and pivotal to maintain public trust in institutions. So I think that's, for me, on a personal level, that was my perspective and that was in my mind while scrolling my Twitter, nonstop 24 hours, just trying to see, what could possibly go wrong, what is happening and things like that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think we can all relate, regardless of where your political leanings are, like over the past few days, it's been an endless scrolling Twitter, 20 different tabs open, yeah, trying to get minute by minute updates.
Absolutely.
So now, Sharon, you were also involved in the protests. You also demanded for the resignation of Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. What were your initial thoughts on his resignation?
Well, actually, I was involved as a participant. I'm not really the organizer. I have to make a caveat before people get a wrong impression. The state prime movers are actually the non-partisan youth, including one here I'm standing the stage with, Kira. Mm-hmm. Now, moving forward, firstly, the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin was a good move because it has sent a clear warning to all self-centric career politicians that if you did a trashy job and if you are corrupted, you are morally bankrupt, you will be vacated from your position. So that I've actually sent a clear message. And if you look since the resignation of Muhyiddin, suddenly all the ex-ministers and these career politicians who used to be very arrogant became very humble. Suddenly everyone is an honor to serve and everything. A language we have not existed outside PSM before. And then suddenly now everyone's taking a humble approach, which is good. But on the flip side, the ball of choosing the next prime minister was thrown into the royal court. It was thrown into the Agong's palace. Okay, so they are pulling in Agong as the referee. And it has started the what we call the statutory declaration drama again. And this will actually lead to political horse trading and patronage, which we are seeing. And if you have been following the news closely, there has been some MPs who are already making horse trades with all potential prime minister aspirants. And if you look at now, it's no more the games of kata, it's the game of kangaroos. Okay, you've got people jumping over a party, big factions. Everybody is trying to cut a deal. And this deal, including things like minister posts, including patronage for their concho-conchos, for their followers, right? So when you look at this entire thing, how you can conclude is that, yes, Muhyiddin's resignation has created an atmosphere where political leaders are not immune from being vacated from their position. But at the same time, it has started a wrong foot forward, where now instead of going to the parliament to resolve the whole thing, they pulled in the Agong as a referee for this entire thing, and which started the entire SD drama, which is now going to go back to the political patronage, corruption, which the people, including the youths, were actually fighting for at the first place.
Kira, Sharon brings up a good point. It's a point that constitutional lawyers have brought up as well, you know, putting the YDPA in the awkward position or, you know, not settling, you know, the drama that is unfolding in parliament. Because as we know now, you know, that the prime minister has resigned, the numbers game will be in full effect. Leaders of the party will be scrambling, parties will be scrambling to find a majority. Now, this entire decision-making, right, Kira, is it's completely out of our control. It only involves the MPs in parliament. And like Sharon said, many constitutional lawyers have also said, at least if it was conducted, these discussions and all that in parliament, we will get to witness it. But now everything is happening behind closed doors. And as a result, many young people are feeling disenfranchised. They don't feel like they have the power to decide once again, like over and over again. They feel like they are put in this spot where they do not have any decision-making power. What advice would you give young people who are feeling this way?
I guess when it comes, disenfranchisement and the feeling of hopelessness comes from a place where you don't have control. I think for young people, and I would also assume this is the reason why many of the people turned out for the protests on the 31st of July, is that they don't see any other platforms or avenues for them to react or process you know, what's going on right now. So I think, you know, Sharon pointed out a good point that, you know, when we don't go to parliament to decide the next MP, it will be up to sign declarations and it will be up to, you know, there's horse trading and it encourages the culture of corruption and cronyism. I think one way for young people to sort of like regain that control and regain that sense of agency is to get educated on what makes up our parliamentary democracy, what makes up our parliamentary system. Why is it that MPs are the one that choose, and why, for example, you know, we don't choose our prime minister or, and stuff like that. So I think with that knowledge, with that information, we're able to hold our elected MPs to power, to accountability. You know, we're able to hold them responsible for the decision that they make. So I think it's very important now, you know, I think someone pointed out on Twitter that, you know, when the Sheraton move was happening, you know, PH was releasing press statements like every hour or something. And I think journalists was trying their best to just keep track of it. But right now it's been quite silent. You know, I think they released one statement acknowledging it. And then, you know, it's on the press side, it's been quite silent, right? Besides, you know, people tweeting vague stuff on social media. But I think it's very important for MPs to be transparent in terms of like what's going on. Because when the silence comes, you know, backdoor discussions, back channeling, that the people who, the one that they are serving are not privy to. So just why I hope that, you know, MPs are calling for a reopening of parliament, you know, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, the prime minister, caretaker PM, is still a PM. And he is able to call for a sitting to determine the next prime minister. So I think that is the rightful way to do it. And I think the next prime minister should not be chosen by signed declarations or indicators of confidence outside of parliament, even though it may be legal. You know, and I'm not a legal expert, but what I am is I'm a concerned citizen. And I want to see my MPs discuss and debate this in parliament where it's transparent and where people are able to, you know, form our decisions and what we think about them. I think without transparency, without having that openness, it's very difficult for people to not just trust you know, Perikatan Nasional as a coalition or even the Prime Minister for letting go, but it's also very difficult to trust the opposition MPs that who are in making the right decision if it's not transparent.
So Sharon, I'm actually very curious to get your take on this because you are from Party Socialist Malaysia. And It's a party that I think very few people will deny that has been doing really, really, excellent grassroots work and so on and so forth, and, you know, helping the people from the bottom and whatnot. But in terms of political representation, there's no MP from Parti Socialist Malaysia. This has been an uphill battle for y'all for a while. And y'all know that, you know, the ideal world that you particularly want this country to be, according to your party's ideological and social leanings, is probably not going to be achieved, you know, in the immediate future, right? So with that in mind, how do you tell people that regardless of the situation, you shouldn't feel disenfranchised, that you actually do have a role to play and you know, you actually have power, that the people in general have power?
Actually, when we look at the current electoral system, this is sometimes what a socialist would call it as a bourgeois democracy. It gives you an illusion that it's actually a democratic process, but truthfully, it's kind of an outsourcing process where every 5 years, you choose a bunch of fellows to run the country. But in reality, when you look after the electoral, a lot of demonstration and protest is towards them. So you are protesting against the same people that you are voting for. And this system is a winner-takes-it-all system. It does not reflect the ideology of our society, neither the pluralism or the diversity. So you look, someone with a 40-50% vote can actually gain 2/3. And this is not something done only after Mahathir. This has been existent from the time of Tunku Abdurrahman, because the system itself, which leads back to Magna Carta, was designed to keep only a handful of elites in power. And you need a lot of money to win elections. And PSM, which our annual operational budget is just about 100,000, is actually equivalent to some other party's branch. But that is the amount that we run, and we don't take big term financial. So if you don't have big finance, big money, you can't win this election. And time to time, PSM, we are perfectly aware where our position will be when it comes to electoral. But we still find relevance in actually moving the people, because change does not only happen from Pilihan Raya, it happens from Jalan Raya. Now, when we look at that, where does the young people actually comes here, is that first we have to understand the modus operandi of first past poster system, which Kira have saliently said that they actually have to educate themselves, and you do not expect the our school to teach it. You may have to learn it yourself, but thanks to internet, your information is actually at your fingertips. Now, moving forward, what the young people need to do now is to organize themselves to become a political force. They should not just simply go around tweeting who should be the next PM candidate, because you will risk creating a sort of iconism. And this time to time shows iconism creates corruptions, poor policy, high level of inequality, patronage, well messing by a handful of people. So do not go and support the individuals at the first, but demand for proper democratic process, okay? Whether it's legal, not legal, I know there's a lot of people saying you should follow this clause, that's all, but there is something known as a first-time precedence, where you can take a different route. And the constitution does not actually prevent such manner. So the young people should actually push their MPs, their local MPs, tell them not to sign any such SDs at all at the first place. Second, demand for an urgent parliament session to vote for a pioneer aspirant. Of course, they may say the parliament is small, you may have a COVID cases. It doesn't matter. You can do it in the Putrajaya International Convention Center, which is the biggest convention place in this country. You can have social distancing. You can throw about 222 chairs inside, no problem. That can be done here. And then in the parliament, anybody who wants to be a prime minister should actually put themselves forward and put their credential and background forward. People should know whether you have been charged for corruption, you're facing any ongoing charges and stuff. So it must be done a transparent process. Okay, you see, even if a young people who wants to apply for a job, there's so many things we have to do, from resume, this and that and everything, including going to an interview process. But these prime ministers wants to become just signs a few piece of paper inside a conditional room in a hotel, which a lot of people doesn't know that hotel exists at the first place. Okay, so when you go to the parliament, the idea, you must have a multi-round kind of electoral system inside, where anybody wants to be a PM, list themselves, go to a certain round of, you know, telling about your credential, your and stuff, and including your flip side, which should be also be transparently put down on the table, okay? And then you go for a voting. And the voting idea was is to remove the last person. Say there is 17 candidates. Fine, let there be 17 candidates. But each round, you eliminate the last person until you get the last 2 person and you re-vote again. This system is fairer and it's cleaner. Of course, it may sound idealist, but democracy is an ideal process. Okay, It is slow, but it's sustainable. And this is where you will know that whether the person has a long-term public support. And this matters. This really matters. So it is not about who becomes at this juncture. It's about how you get it done. If you do not resolve it today, the Sheraton move and Muhyiddin resignation will be put our country into an infinite loop of political pulling the rug. The next person right. comes in, his rug gets pulled out. And the next person comes in, gets pulled out. And this will eventually lead to more corruption because every time you need a new prime minister, more patronage will be given out. You will have an overbloated ministerial cabinet. You will have a lot of corruption coming in, a lot of projects being swindled. That matters. So to conclude my argument, the role of young people is actually far from over in building our inclusive democracy for now. As we've seen with the resurgence of all the collection of SDs, so now our job is to come into the picture, organize ourselves, and push for a cleaner and fairer process in electing the next prime minister.
On the show with me today is Kira Yusri, co-founder of Undi 18, and Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. After the break, I'll be asking them who they think should be the next prime minister. We'll be back on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Kira Yusri, co-founder of Undi 18, and Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're talking about Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's resignation as the prime minister of Malaysia, which happened yesterday. And what do the youth want next? One of the demands of the Lawan protests was that a full moratorium, and y'all specifically mentioned that, you know, y'all want a proper one, not a half-baked one, to be given to all Malaysians to weather the storm that is COVID-19. Is this something that you're hoping or you're perhaps demanding that the next government fulfill as well?
I think no matter what form the policy looks like, whether it's in cash moratorium, whether it's in cash injections, cash handouts, I think the thing that you want to highlight is economic support is fundamental for Malaysians to survive the pandemic. I think that's the most important, I guess, value that we're trying to raise awareness on. Because it's not enough to just ramp up vaccinations. And then, you know, our healthcare system, you know, hospitals are overflowing, you know, businesses are going bankrupt. You know, my favorite kopitiams in KL are closing down, you know, and then you see more and more, you know, Malaysians selling nasi lemak on the streets because there's no other avenues for them to generate income. And I feel like while we can celebrate Malaysians getting closer to herd immunity due to ramped up vaccinations and, you know, allowing walk-in vaccinations and opening vaccinations for migrant workers to walk in, but the fundamental economic hardship is so hard to come back from. It's so hard to recover. And I'm not even, you know, and I think for young people especially, the doom of, like, you know, that unemployment, and then, you know, and it's not like, you know, we can just encourage people to sell something to generate income. It's not as easy to be an entrepreneur. So I think economic aid is not coming through fast enough with Muhyiddin's administration. And I think that should be the key priority for the next administration, regardless who it is. You know, if we cannot just you know, inform the country that, okay, vaccinations are on the right track, hence we will, you know, weather through this storm. We're going to come out vaccinated, but so broke and so bankrupt that, you know, as a country, it's going to be so hard to build back. And you know, going into economic hardship is not just like not being able to put food on the table, but the mental health repercussions, you know, the despair of not being able to provide for yourself and your family will eventually take a toll on people. And you know, and I think the ripple effects is just something so scary for us to consider and we have not really thought about yet.
Now, Sharon, you know, just adding on to what Kira already said, what do you think the new government should prioritize?
The first one will be the COVID response. So the new health minister needs to actually set up an inclusive consultative council, and it should be represented by all the main key stakeholders and workers in the public healthcare. the minister must actually stop consulting all these so-called technocrats and private sector, because truthfully, they are very clueless about what's happening in the ground. And that is because they are not really the working people in the public hospital. So they do not know the bottlenecks of why our public hospital is collapsing at the first place. And the private sector, they come in, they only provide ideas and policies which favors for them to make higher profit, not to actually save us from COVID. They are still trying to milk us there, and we have to look this properly. So now, taking that forward, the fundamental for all crisis management is to identify the root problem of the crisis and then solving it from there. And MOH, the Ministry of Health, must set up a council made of senior doctors, contract doctors, hospital support staff like X-ray attendants, cleaners, pharmacies, disease research, all these particular groups who are actually working on the ground, combating COVID-19 hand-to-hand at the first line itself. And they have to be brought to Putrajaya to tell what's wrong. Okay, and they can help us identify the bottlenecks in their respective operation, ranging from the lack of personal protection equipments to ICU to gas cylinders. And not many people know, we actually had a shortage of cleaning equipments even before COVID. So our hospital cleaners were already suffering from shortage of equipments at the first instance. And many do not know, barely 2 days ago, we actually lost a hospital cleaner to COVID itself. Okay? So that shows the lack of poor working condition. Poor working condition for them at the first instance. And all of these are not captured in the macro policy at Putrajaya. Now, when you look at the second thing, what the government should focus on, circumstantial poverty. The nearly 12,000 people have died from COVID-19. 1,000 more have died from self-suicide. And we can expect at least about 15,000 people to pass away by end of the year in a worst-case scenario. I hope it does not reach that, but in a worst-case scenario. And a lot of them are actually the sole breadwinner in their family. They have left behind their wives. They have left behind their children. They have left behind their old age parents. So there's a lot of dependence for them. And all of these people have been thrown into poverty. And they are not in poverty because they are lazy, but because they are circumstantial poverty. And the government needs to look at a social advancement policy or anti-poverty measures for this group of people. If we do not do anything for them, a lot of these old people will be begging on the streets. A lot of these young people, children, will be risk dropping out from school. They may actually get into crime. I'm just going to take a quick quote from the Greece philosopher Aristotle, that where he had actually mentioned, okay, poverty is the parent of revolution and crime. So we have to look at this group of people who have become circumstantial poverty, which are still not in the macro policy of discussion. And they have still not made into any discussion. I have not seen any members of parliament. I have not seen any ministers talking about them. But they are there, coming to PSM's service center day to day, week to week, looking for some sort of aid. They're looking for some sort of support. But the food basket may help the poverty for a few days. But beyond that, we need a long-term solution. On the third front, the major reform is it's the whole patronage and cronyism political system must go. The race-based politics system, they have been giving out several hundred thousands of patronage positions, ranging from GLCs to city councils to Ketua Kampongs, even youth councils to a certain extent. And they have set up so many redundant government agency and commercial entities to create director position for all these political patronage positions. And there are about hundreds of thousands of them. By my last count, there was at least about 300,000 of these positions, which comes with salary, pension, perks worth tens of billions of ringgit per annum. Okay, and this does not include the cost of cronies project and so on. Yeah, and when you factor in all the historical financial costs since the form of federation until now, the cost of cronism and patronage is multiple times higher than the entire 1 MDB adjusted to inflation. Okay, and this financial burden from patronage and cronism has reduced the funds for us to improve our hospitals, to abolish PTPTN, or even to review the salary of our civil servant. Many people don't know, the salary of civil servant has not been reviewed for nearly 20 years. Okay, so summing things up, this new government must focus on three things. One, focusing on combating COVID-19 by establishing a council made of real working people in the public hospital. Okay, second, you need to focus on the circumstantial poverty of a lot of dependents left behind by the deceased COVID-19 victims. And thirdly, the entire patronage and cronyism-based political system must be destroyed permanently.
Kira, you know, we talk about, you know, Sharon brought up a few aspects of reforms that need to happen. Mm. Another aspect that I think is important is something that you and your co-founder, Dharma, started years ago. Y'all pushed for it, eventually got the constitution amended after bipartisan support from both sides of the aisle. And finally, the voting age was lowered from 21 to 18. That's already amended in the constitution. But it has been stuck in limbo.
And recently dangled for, you know.
Yes. And so exactly. So I want to ask you a couple of different things there. Number one, what do you think of Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin on his final days? Last week, he said that, you know, he basically reached out on live TV to all the MPs and the people and said, if the MPs give him support, especially if he gets like 2/3 support, then he will, you know, finally implement the lowering of the voting age and then alongside various other reforms. So I guess the question is, what do you think of him doing that, you know, dangling it like a carrot, like as you said. Mm. And also, when it comes to this new government, whoever it may be, will y'all continue pressuring them to make sure that this is implemented?
I think, okay, I'll answer the second question for the first question. So I think the pressure is going to continue regardless of who is in the administration. I mean, we are already in court trying to battle this out because we believe that, you know, we believe that it can be decoupled. We believe that you don't need to go to parliament. And in fact, because parliament has not been open, we also can't ask the government about it, right? Hence why we chose, the judiciary as a way to get some answers and to pressure the government, and no matter who is the government, to implement it as soon as possible. I think on the first part, how I feel about, Tan Sri Muhyiddin, offering it as part of his, reforms, offers to the opposition to support him in as prime minister. I think Undi Tin released a statement saying that, you know, we don't want Undi Tin to be Undi Tin the reform to be a bargaining tool for politicians to decide in terms of choosing a prime minister.
Right.
I think it's important that all these institutional reforms are one thing to recognize that they were actually on Pakatan Harapan's manifesto anyway, right? And assuming that, you know, they did not have Sheraton move, assuming they wanted to implement all of these reforms lah, but also important to note they didn't do it, right? And I think that's something for them to answer, for them to clarify on. I'm not going to comment on that. What I'm going to comment on, however, is that these institutional reforms are fundamental to our democracy. They are fundamental to ensure checks and balances, to ensure transparency, and also most important, to ensure that, you know, Malaysians get the right that we deserve. And I think it shouldn't be offered as it shouldn't be a political tool to determine vote of confidence, because, you know, it doesn't make the reforms look genuine. And I know that, you know, maybe it's too much to ask for politicians to be genuine. Maybe I am just, you know, an optimist, I'm idealistic. After all, I'm young. But I think it's important to understand, and it's important for the public also to have faith that, you know, our politicians are able to understand the gravity of these reforms, and that they want to implement it because it's right and not because they want to remain in power. I think intentions are very important for the public to retain their trust in our democratic system, to retain their trust in the institutions. An institution as important as the parliament cannot be taken hostage through these institutional reforms, these offers of institutional reforms. And I think it's just so incredibly disappointing, to see that coming from the Prime Minister. But I think that's not the worst thing he's done, I suppose, in the larger scheme of things. But I think, as a young activist who's been working on these reforms for a while now, I think it's frustrating to see that after so long of us pushing for these reforms, you know, CDF, you know, Bersin pushing for CDF, pushing for so many of the other, like, parliamentary independence and all that, and of course, Undi 18, to see it now surfacing because he's so desperate to cling on power just indicates nothing but pure desperation. You know, it does not indicate any intention to improve the country. It does not indicate any initiative to actually restore public institutions as pillars of democracy. And I think as Rakyat, we shouldn't enable that lah, because what kind of precedents are we setting? You know, what if in the future should politicians hold access to education as a bargaining chip? You know, if you don't vote for me, everyone have to pay for school. You know, like right. That's stopping them from doing much worse things, right? And I think it's important for us to make our voice it's important to stand firm to this kind of like threats. And I'm glad to see many politicians, all the parties said no to that offer, and which is why Muhyiddin resigned. So I think, that's a important stand to make lah.
Now, switching gears just a little bit, you tweeted something, was it yesterday or the day before, that I really like. Mm-hmm. You tweeted that when, you know, new governments and future governments should separate the Ministry of Youth and Sports. Why is this so? Why do you think so?
I think I just want to just casually say that, you know, we did that in UNIDI's program, Dewan Muda Malaysia.
Right.
I think I always found it very odd that Malaysia associate youth and sports to be in a similar category.
Right.
Because let's look at the recent Olympics where you see, you know, people much older than youth competing in the Olympics. And I don't think, you know, sports is something that young people are exclusively gravitate towards. So I think, and I guess just learning from other countries how they separate their, and I think it just shows their priorities, right?
Right.
I think the development of human development is very important, and it's very odd that in Malaysia it's separate. We have a women community children's ministry or something, and then we have the women's, and then we have like Ministry of Education, and then we have Ministry of Higher Education, and then we have Ministry of Youth and Sports. In many countries, people development, cultural development are seen interlinked. So I think in the UK there is the Ministry of like Digital Media, Culture and Sports or something like that. And that's just super cool, right? Because you can see clearly how all of this link together, right? Imagine if you could merge Ministry of Youth and Culture, Ministry of Youth and Culture and Heritage,
right,
and stuff. Because these are, you know, fundamentally, I guess, you know, when we have a sports achievement, the country unites, right? And I think it's just odd to like lump it together with young people, because I guess maybe they assume that only young people play sports, which I think is another indicator for other things lah, right?
Yep.
So I think however, my suggestion was to put a Ministry of Children and Youth, because I think if a country really genuinely focuses on youth development, it's important to center these two demographics then, right? Because if you want to invest in the future, you need to call it out and specifically allocate resources in that investment. So in UNIDI's program, Dewan Muda Malaysia, we have Ministry of Children and Youth, who is mentored by Dr. Tini, Hartini Zainuddin, founder of Yayasan Chowkit. And, you know, we are looking at things like child marriage, we're looking at issues of access to healthcare, access to employment, access to basic rights, which, you know, in that context, you realize that how come it's not together? You know, how come these are not stakeholders that are, you know, considered to be considered together in that sense.
Right.
So that's just why I guess I just put the idea out there. I'm not sure if, you know, if anybody will listen to it. But you know, I hope that people will, you know, rethink of like actually what I think, you know, having certain ministries, forming ministries indicate the priority of a country. So what is the priority of our country when we have, you know, like, you know, 30 plus ministries and 70 plus minister and deputy ministers. So I think with the new government, I hope that, and I don't know if it's too far-fetched, is that, you know, hoping and that the new government will be innovative in terms of like allocating their manpower to indicate their focus areas or their priorities lah, right? And I even spoke to Dr. Kaur recently, and he mentioned something interesting, like, you know, Ministry of Health, maybe it shouldn't be a Ministry of Health. Maybe it should be a Ministry of Healthcare, right? So
right.
You have an emphasis on public health policies. You have emphasis on like, you know, prevention and research. So it's not just thinking about like, okay, we need how many hospitals? We need to fund hospitals, we need to fund doctors, but also healthcare overall. How do you actually, push forward a more innovative and I guess out-of-the-box healthcare policies, right? So I think those are things that, you know, we can dream about, and hopefully, you know, and maybe just thinking about how can the new generation of politicians rethink how we look at policies even. Yeah.
Certainly. And I think innovative, that word is important. And it really stands out because I think, you know, what's been lacking from our top leadership for many, many, many years is that is innovation, it's creativity and things like that. Now, one last thing, I want to ask you something else, Kira, before I, you know, ask both of you all the million dollar question. And that was, you know, as part of SSR, you know, there was supposed to be a Lawan protest happening this Saturday, you know, a continuation of the protest that has been going on for a few months, especially the street one that took place a few weeks ago. Now that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has resigned, I'm guessing this Saturday's protest is no longer happening. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, he has resigned, but he's still prime minister. A caretaker prime minister, interim prime minister, he's still prime minister. And I think Sinew pointed it out in his interview with Consider This last night. So I think at the moment, it's important to also see that just because Muhyiddin has stepped down, it doesn't mean that someone, it could possibly mean that someone from his cabinet will become prime minister. And for me, on a personal level, I don't agree with that. I think every single cabinet member during Muhyiddin's administration has to resign and has to be accountable to their failures in doing their job. So I think, for me at least, I would not accept that anyone from Muhyiddin's administration to become the new prime minister. Because, you know, there are rumors of like Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, Hishamuddin and so on. So I think at the moment, because he is still, in a way, prime minister, we will proceed as usual. In fact, yesterday we submitted the notice for under the Public Assembly Act to the police. And today we will submit to DBKL, informing them of the protest. So I think until he is really not the prime minister, caretaker or not, I think people want to see that change. And I think the SSR is willing to, you know, sort of like represent that change and that demand and the constant push for change. At the very least, I think we want assurance that the new prime minister will be selected through votes in parliament and not through signed declarations.
Guys, I want to ask both of y'all the million-dollar question. All of us, you know, we've been asking each other, we've been, you know, tweeting about, we've been listening to other people's opinions. Who should be the next prime minister, Sharon?
Well, to put who should be the next prime minister, it should be someone above the age of 18 years old and a Malaysian. Okay, so it's an open question for everybody. But I do not want to actually give out a name.
Okay.
It's unfair for us to actually pick out a name and start tweeting, I want this person, that person. We should stop with iconism. Okay, we have seen how much iconism have done damage to our country, to our great federation. Okay, so what we need to be emphasizing now is the process, how we get the prime minister for that matters. We have to stop all the statutory declaration, horse trading, kata, kangaroos, rabbits, whatever you want to call it. And we actually should settle it properly by bringing it to the parliament. We need to respect the people's democracy, because democracy in Malaysia was not granted free by the British. We actually fought for it. Our forefathers fought for democracy, right? And that democracy must be respected. We need to bring it to the parliament. And anybody who wants to be prime minister, who is has dreams to hold the number one job in this country, must actually enlist yourself in the parliament, and you must go through a proper due process of putting forward your credential, your background, and so on. Okay, if you have been arrested, you have been detained, let us know why you were arrested and you were detained, and let us people judge you from there. Okay, and we do not want to see this hypocrisy where one day one political party say we force Muhyiddin to resign because we're doing it for the riot, and then the next moment he was telling about, oh, we want all the MPs to listen to what our party leadership is saying. You follow the party. If you ask you to sign for this guy. So there's a lot of hypocrisy going on, including around in the party circle itself. So moving forward, who should be the next prime minister? It should be a Malaysian who above the age of 18. And I am more concerned how it's actually done than who actually becomes, right? Because if it's not done properly, it still goes into the wrong infinite loop of cronyism, patronage, nepotism. It goes in infinite. And this next coming government may be shorter than Muhyiddin itself if we do not do the proper due process.
On a personal level, I would love to see a female prime minister.
Right.
You know, I think it will add some fresh perspective. It will add some really maybe like radical way. Maybe, okay, Sharon might disagree on what I think radical is, but I think it makes a radical perspective into the system. But I also agree with Sharon in the sense that, like, because we live in a democracy, and I am someone, I respect our democracy, and I really value our constitution. So for me, I think that whoever that can command the confidence of the majority of the House, because I voted for my MP, and I have to trust that my MP made the right choice. Of course, since Sheraton moved, that clearly has like eroded the trust a little bit. But it's important to understand that these structures are meant to preserve a system. And I want to be able to respect that structure and the parliamentary process. So while, of course, I have my ideal wish list and stuff, and I would love to see someone who is not in the generic lineup of like candidates, right? Which are, you know, like all Malay Muslim men. So I think... However, I realistically know that that's unlikely. So at the very least, I would like to emphasize that the decision must be made through parliament, must be made through Dewan Rakyat, and not behind the scenes lah. But yeah, I mean, if you're asking me what is, you know, if I had it my way, right, I would love to see a politician that has actually worked in government, that has actually worked before with the people, with solid working experience, where working experience not just being an MP. I think it will really introduce a fresh start lah, and provide new perspective for what Malaysian governance could look like.
Certainly. And on that note, Kira, Sharon, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much, Dashan.
Thank you, Dashan. It's glad to be here.
I've been speaking with Kira Yusri of Undi 18 and Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.